Okay. Welcome back to the exciting season conclusion of my miniseries. My hero keeps going, but my miniseries is concluded. We'll see if maybe, like I joked with Noah, maybe we'll kill off one of the characters. Maybe we'll come back next week. I don't know. We'll see what happens. We've got a bit to do today. We dealt with the Matrix, which I guess was an unbelievable insight into what was then postmodern film. We dealt with romance. Now we're going to look at something which is a little easier and a little harder, as that we know it a little bit better. Definitely better than the Matrix. Maybe a little better than romance. In which we're going to talk about perm. And to a certain extent, we have both an advantage and a disadvantage in dealing with something that we know a little bit better. Because we have as what Reverend Foreman calls the lullaby effect. There are elements that we're very, very used to, and we accept them as just being there. And because we accept them as just being there, we don't use the critical aspects of our thinking because it's just always been there. So, for example, take yet one of everyone's favorite lullabies, you know, Rockabye Baby on the treetop when the wind blows, the cradle will rock. When the bell rings, the cradle will fall, they'll come, baby, cradle and all. Now, of course, that if you think about what you're saying about a child in a tree that's going to fall out of a tree, you know, probably get seriously injured, and you're wondering, why am I singing this to my child when I'm trying to put them to sleep? If anything, it would make sure that they don't fall asleep, because, you know, go to sleep so we can put you up in a tree, and the wind will like, shake your crib, and then you'll fall out and break your neck. Ah, give you good memories. Whereas I like to put it to my chaver, because it's Brooklyn. You know, you got a pair of tzitzis in your upshare, by your upshare, because a lot of people in Brooklyn did. And chances are it had Thomas the Tank Engine on it, because a lot of them did. And that was fine when you were three, it was very cute. But Lu Yitzuyer, it shouldn't be that you're wearing the same Thomas the Tank Engine tzitzis when you're 22 as it was then when you were three. And we have a lot of stuff in our heads, and we haven't really had a chance to unpack them, or if you'll excuse me, deconstruct them. Nice. Right? Deconstruct them. Hashtag postmodernist. Take them apart and understand a little bit more, and think about them a little bit more deeply. So I prepared, a collage. It's a good word, a collage of some thoughts, some and their interlocking thoughts from Rav Shagar about perm. Sorry. Now, there's a number of Rav Shagar's farm already out on perm. Well, there's the one volume on perm, little paperback, and then you'll find that there are two other svarim that have entries on perm on them already. So there's what to do with to try to encapsulate everything Shagarian about Purim Yafshar. But to talk about one little point, we definitely can. So I want to start actually a little bit differently this week with a piece from the book called Teinim Metukim is a collection of teachings of Chassidut that Shlomo Shok learns from Rav Shagar, and it's a very, very interesting book as it was written in Rav Shagar's life, and he reproduces some teachings from Rav Shagar and then also adds a poem now and again in terms of trying to express what it was that Rav Shagar was trying to say. And it's a fascinating glimpse, because it's written in a different way than the other books that we have. Whereas the other books, you know, Purim, I believe, was actually produced with a lot of Rav Shagar's hand, and the other ones are reconstructions of different drashot that were put together by different Talmidim until they got the chapters and the essays that we have. Here, you know, this is, again, a little old school where it says in the introduction and on the back cover that he, you know, he found like a shoebox full of tapes from the old days with Rav Shagar. I mean, maybe Rav Noam has the same experience with some of his Rebbeim from. I definitely do have a shoebox full of tapes in my closet from different Rebbeim, and you know, from time to time, I've entertained the same type of thoughts of like making a little booklet of this. Even before I found this booklet, I'm like, this is something I would do. I would do something like this. Like, so put out a booklet of reconstructed shiurim from tapes in a shoebox. Now, that's definitely like postmodernist. Maybe it's not modernist even. I don't know. So get an idea what time it is. I don't want to run over again. So first, let's look at the two bold pieces, the two bold face typed on page 126 and 127. I believe it's at the top of the packet.
Yeah, there's two different packets. This is the one that has the larger page size. They're all kind of dark. We should be able to make out.
I'm sorry. I thought mine were pretty light.
I should have fiddled with the light. Yeah, it just comes out dark.
Wow. There's something philosophical about that also. Wow, the fiddling with the light in the dark. The Zohar's candle of darkness and, you know, the Mabat and paradigms and whatnot.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at.
Wow, unbelievable. Wow, you're going to be a full-fledged Kabbalist by the time we're done with you.
I'm getting there.
Okay, so here we have a quote from Pri Yitzchayim. Pri Yitzchayim is a collection of teachings from the Arizal. And it's written in a little bit shorter hand. There are two famous collections of the Arizal's teachings that have to do with the holidays, Shar Kavanot and Pri Yitzchayim. Pri Yitzchayim seems to have made its way around Europe a lot sooner. And within it contains a lot of the Arizal's Torot on the Yamim Tovim. So let's see the two lines from the Arizal about Purim, and then we'll see what Rav Shagar said. V'hine ma sh'amru Razal shechai v'inesh lebesume b'puria ad lo yada ben aror haman lebaruch Mordechai u'lazet tzarich ha'adam l'shtaker b'yom hazeh u'lai yishke v'yitem bracha l'oto ha'nitzot shebeklipa v'yitvarech gam hu. Very interesting. Very, very interesting. So what we have over here is a statement. You know, we are familiar with the explanation of the Gemara. The Gemara says that a person has to besume Yom Puria, whatever besume means. It would seem to have something to do with drinking alcohol. Speak to your LOR as to how to do that. We're not going to discuss that here. But one has to besume Yom Puria by ad lo yada. He has to get drunk on Purim, whatever that means, again, so that you don't know between Aror HaMan and Baruch Mordechai. Fine. We know the Gemara. We've heard the Gemara. We haven't even heard the song. We haven't even sang the song. And then there is Aletz. And for this, a person needs to be drunk. Why? Because maybe he'll make a mistake and give a bracha to that klipa, that sparking klipa, and he'll be blessed through it. Okay. Now we heard sparking klipa, which is starting also to bring us down that way of that path of the Kabbalists. We heard some buzzwords already. A little bit of the jargon is out of the bag. So let's understand how Rav Shagar parses this. Bein ha-matzavim ha-nafshiim ha-mistaklim oti, hu tzarich u-kima'at t'midi lo orech ha-shvot v'havchanot. Part of my life, what my life is about, is really making comparisons and distinctions. All the things that I do as I go through my life, I'm making comparisons and distinctions. I'm thinking, I'm understanding, I'm being kolet. Tamid nidreshet ha'adafa alay lifchor ben leben. I have to choose between this one and that one. Alay lashvot l'hiot batuach shani bocher nachon meduyach mitziyuti relevanti otenti li. I am constantly trying to make the decisions of what will be authentic, what will be relevant, what will be real. It's a part of my life on a constant basis. I make decisions, and I based on previous experiences, I then induce and deduce and try to figure out what I'm supposed to do. Bifurim mit afsheret metziut acheret. Ba'an yachol lilmod litragel ech lahafsich lasot havchanot להשוות כל הזמן לחיות במצב של הבדלה המתמשכת מהעייפת. אני ממש נעשה שמח מן האפשרות ההולכת ונתינת לי כאן בעניין פורים עד לא ידע. האם זה רק פעם בשנה? ולמה לא יבוא פורים פעמיים בשנה? So he says, on Purim, it allows me to have a different existence. Within it, I'm able to learn and to see how I can stop trying to make distinctions and making things look the same, and just to be in a matzav in a way of consistent detachment. I can just be possible with any possibility that can happen. And any mekavein livroch miachrayutai. I'm not running away from responsibility. Then life is full of distinctions, and vavoy if we make the wrong distinctions, you know. B'metziut mitkayemet ma'arechet shel chitzon shliliot. Ani tzarech lizaher mehem. Shemachas v'shal mitlabesh alai klipot ha'chayim v'yech nakeni b'tochi kol nitzut v'tikva shel kedusha. There are things in the world that are spiritually dangerous, which are referred to by the Mekubalim as klipot. Klipot means type of spiritual energy. It's like a spiritual leech that takes energy from the side of the good and drags it down to become something corrupted and bizarro of what its possibility is. And as such, it's like, I don't know if anyone played Metroid, but it's like, you know, like spiritual Metroids or leeches, those are good too. Just sucking the life out of you. And the idea, and what this means, and how we wrap our head around this Kabbalistic terminology, he says that, HaKavana hi sheyesh nitzot kedusha b'chol klipa, nitzot shel kedusha mechayet haklipa. And what powers anything in existence? That there's some divinity to it there as well. And were I to draw that good energy out of the klipa, it would disappear. Now, he's just given us a whole lot of cosmology and a little space for a second to just stretch it out. For a second to understand that when the world was created, we spoke about it two times ago, the notion of Shviat HaKelim, that the Arizal describes how the world was created by having vessels that were smashed, right? And this imagery which is used, right, created that we have these vessels, and there were these vessels, they were pristine, and how did God create the world? By making too much for the vessels to hold. Too much for the vessels to be able to be bachlil, right? And as a result, the abundance of light shattered the vessels. From this abundance of light shattering the vessels, all the pieces of the vessels fell to this world. Everything which a person does is to redeem those pieces of vessels that were broken at the beginning. Right? Everything one does is to rescue those. The ones that fell the deepest, right, into the darkest parts of the world are these sparks that that Rosh Hagar is referring to right now. There's the side of good and the good choices, and the side of bad and bad choices. So the Mekubalim refer to it, the side of bad choices, as klipa. That when a person makes good choices, so then things go to the side of Kedusha, you know, the good side, the side of light, the forces of light. And then the person makes bad choices, so then the energy goes to the other side, right? So it refers to the Zohar, it refers to Sitra Achra, the other side, right? The other side, that means the side of impurity, of darkness, of the klipa. Klipa also, as we know, so these are, whenever we're using the shonot of Mekubalim and the Zohar, these are phrases of mashalim, right? Of allegories upon allegories upon allegories. And different schools of Kabbalah are going to try to explain what these mashalim, what these allegories are. And when we use a certain phrase, what this means. And how, you know, there are schools of thought that say, this is the allegory, just take it. And then there are those, actually, as funny as you think about it, I'm going to say a phrase which to a lot of people is going to make your face go, what? Lithuanian Kabbalists, okay, what? Lithuanian Kabbalists, like the Gra, like Chaim Volozhiner, like Rav Eliashiv the First, are about trying to understand what the imagery that were used by the Mekubalim and how this imagery and allegory work. So when we say that there's this concept called the klipa, klipa is like, you know, klipa in modern Hebrew means like the skin of the fruit or a shell, right? The klipa of your banana, the klipa of your orange. The klipa surrounds whatever is good and useful and stops you from getting to it. So in this imagery, the other side engulfs those sparks that fell at the time of Shvirat HaKelim and stops you from getting them and redeeming them. And most of those sparks are irredeemable because they've fallen into places like that which creates the life force energy which gives rise to things that we can't consume, such as, you know, pig. You know, we can't redeem the sparks in pig because it's not kosher. However, deli kasba, right? We have chicken. The chicken also has sparks. And it fell not so far, not to the deepest, darkest part of the klipa, but in the intermediate klipa, right? The intermediate klipa, that's where what animates and gives life to the chicken and the vegetables. And when we eat it, we redeem it. We redeem those sparks. So here we have, in the cosmology, the side of good, and the broken vessels that fell down into the dark parts of the world, and we redeem them from the intermediate part, and we don't seem to redeem it from the darkest part. That which is in the deepest part of the klipa cannot be redeemed. And this is, you know, I'm sure you read the first couple of prakim of the Tanya. In the Tanya, he discusses this a lot. And Rabbi Nachman discusses this as well. And this is a very, very big doctrine in Kabbalah and Chassidut. Any case, so what Rav Shagar says is that there comes a time right here and right now on Purim that a person drinks a little bit. So maybe they'll accidentally make a bracha on Haman, right? Maybe they'll say Baruch Haman. and in doing so, an unbelievable thing will happen. What will happen is that you'll be able to reach down and accidentally, so to speak, redeem one of those sparks that's in the farthest klipa. You'll accidentally say Baruch Haman, oops, wrong way, and uplift it. What does this mean? This means that there's how did that happen exactly? How did Haman's grandchildren end up teaching Torah in Bnei Brak? It would seem that somebody had a little bit to drink and they accidentally said Baruch Haman. Such a thing. Right? It's such a powerful, powerful thing. There's this way of uplifting of the concept of the notion of where we speak of Bittul B'Shishim, right? The different Rishonim speak out how the idea of Bittul works. You know, everyone's favorite question. Well, what happened in yeshiva? What are you learning for smicha? Well, what happens if a piece of pig falls in your pot of chicken soup, right? Now, nobody asked the obvious question: what was a piece of pig doing in your chicken soup in your kitchen to begin with? But what happens if it falls in the chicken soup? Now, the machlokas we've shown him is, you know, do I have to take it out or not? does it actually go and become part of the chicken soup itself? So according to the Shita that says that it does become part of the chicken soup, that I don't have to take it out where I find it, it's the same idea that that piece of pig was irredeemable. But because it fell in the chicken soup by accident, it could be redeemed. One of the concepts that Shagar deals with in Purim a lot is the notion of the absurdity involved in Purim. It's just out there. It's random. And the randomness is something which, you know, it's hard for us to wrap our heads around. So we see over here in this first teaching from Rosh Hagar and talking about dealing, and it's worthwhile to go through the entire piece, because we don't have time to read through the whole piece. But the entire piece, to see how he brings this out, because even you'll be blessed, he says. Because he says that if we read the Lashon carefully, that you'll also be blessed through this. So that even in the our havchanot, even our distinctions, life isn't always so neat. When we apply this teaching of what you know, who's good and who's bad, what's in and what's out, it's not always so clear who's in and who's out, what's good and what's bad. He said you can make a hafkana, you can make a demonstration. It's one of the favorite pastimes in Israel after soccer, going to demonstrations. You know, so and you have the people on the religious side of the issue, the people on the non-religious side of the issue. He said you'll find people on the religious side who are really not religious, and people who are on the not religious side of the issue who are really very religious. And he said that it doesn't all come together. So at times, that person goes and says Baruch Haman, he doesn't really know that how deep that this goes. But that's absurd. What are you talking about? It, you're breaking through these different categories. You know, the world functions in categories because it does help us make sense of the world. And now you're saying no. He's no. These categories are there, but something about Purim is a bit absurd. Something about Purim is pushing between those boundaries. I want to look at this a little bit further. So for the next piece we're going to do, please get at the ready the second packet, the smaller writing. And let's think about, reflect on the book of Tanakh a little bit of Megillat Esther. Megillat Esther, he says, is really, it's wild if you think about it. Why does a Sefer of Tanakh spend so much time describing all the bling that Ahasuerus has, right? All that bling, all that gold. It keeps on talking about those beds, right? The wine. Let's spend a book of Tanakh talking about how everybody can get whatever they want to eat in a book of Tanakh, right? A book of Tanakh, we're going to talk about, you know, this party. And, you know, and it goes on forever. Like, I can't imagine even going on for, like, even spring break is not that long, right? This party, it's like 160 years. It's a long time. How can a person party for so long, right? How can a person party for so long? Think about the excesses of Ahasuerus, right? He's going to sleep with every non-married woman in the kingdom, in the empire, not just the kingdom. 127 provinces worth of single women. And then we're like, yeah, of course, that makes sense, right? we're indoctrinated already. Like, yeah, that's cool. What do you mean? They're like, if somebody like told you now that there's a figure in power, right? Who did that? Who had every single woman in the kingdom come and sleep with him? We'd be okay with that? Hello, this is a book of Tanakh. This is like, this is the same, you know, the same book as the Sarasa Dibros, right? And we have all the women of 127 provinces. We have a party that goes on for 100 days. And we're cool with that. Right? And we're just totally, yeah, it happens, you know? It happens. It's crazy. And the author of the book of Tanakh, the author of the Megillah is pointing a finger over here. Right? He's like, isn't this crazy? Isn't it crazy? Is it crazy how long they partied? Isn't it crazy how there was that much wine? Isn't it crazy he slept with that many people? Isn't this over the top? Isn't this all over the top? So, And we should be reading Megillah and saying, this is really weird. Not only that, but then Ahasuerus goes, what does he do? He calls a cabinet meeting together. He says, I need to get the cabinet together. We need to decide something very important right now. What are we going to talk about? We need to figure out what language everyone's going to speak in their house. What language do you speak in your house? Right? English? What language do you... It's the equivalent of, you know, treading carefully over here. It's the equivalent of the Prime Minister of Canada. Let's talk about a different country, because already it's a little too political to talk about, our country. The Prime Minister of Canada gets his cabinet together. He says, guys, we've got a serious problem here, eh? Right? I mean, here it actually really could be a problem in Canada. All right, if you're listening, right? So we got a very serious problem here, eh? What language are we speaking in the homes, eh? Yeah. And one of the ministers says, sorry. What? Sorry. What were we talking about? Right. So they say, okay, so if we're going to go after, you know, whatever language that the guy's, the man's parents spoke, that's what we're going to say. And they said, is that okay? Yeah. Right. In Montreal, they didn't like it. Right. They said, everyone has to speak French. But that's where it's going to go. Not only that, who's going to lead the house? Right? Who's going to lead the house? Well, we have to go, we have to legislate this right here, right now. Get the entire cabinet here. The cabinet of an empire, the Empire of Canada, is going to decide who makes the decisions in your house. This is insane. This is insane. This is crazy. And you know, to us, we've read the Psukim already, so again, we're indoctrinated. Like, yeah, totally normal, right? Persia, you know. Persia does, you know, like whatever. This is crazy. You're reading this, like, what is happening over here? Oh, we're sitting here, we get into shul, right? We've been fasting all day, maybe that's why it makes a little more sense. We're a little glucose deprived. And we're saying, yeah, there's a story. This is king. He ruled over 120 provinces, the known world. And he makes this huge party, lots and lots of gold, jewelry. That it gets everyone together, he has this party for a long time, and then he gets the cabinet together and discusses, well, what language we're going to speak in their house. And then, after they've decided this very important topic of what language they're going to speak in some guy's house in the middle of someplace in between Hodu and Kush, right? He then sends out UPH, UPS, DHL, USPS, puts it on the Twitter feed, Insta, Snap, everything. Everything. He wants to get out the word, we've decided you should speak whatever language you want in your house. Right? Armies of horsemen, on the fastest horses, go out with this very, very important message for everybody. And you're saying, wow, this is such a riveting story. It's unbelievable. Whoever's writing this Megillah is really digging into this king. It's really digging into the entire situation here in the Persian Empire. It's really like this idiot king can't figure out what he has to do, and then he's bound by the laws constantly. Wasn't that part, you know, Simba saying about it? I can't wait to be king because you can do whatever you want. Sounds like you can't do whatever you want. Can't do whatever you want at all. It seems to be some type of hybrid constitutional monarchy, right? Where you can't go and go and rescind any of your king. It's crazy. Then he says, "Get me again all of the single women, right? All the single ladies, Beyonce, right? All the single ladies, and then have them marinate for 6 months." But anyway, like. Who wouldn't get like skin poisoning from that? Like sit in myrrh and tamrukim for like months, right? Months. This is crazy. This is crazy stuff. And we're like, yeah, makes sense to me, right? It makes sense to me. Or maybe it's in Hebrew, or maybe this is just what it is. It sounds like a parody, right? A dystopian Middle Eastern empire ruled by a rule-obsessed emperor. It would seem that you're looking at it and you're like, I don't know whether or not to laugh or not. whereas I'm waiting for the punchline. I'm sitting here reading the Megillah, getting ready for the punchline. Like, I don't know whether to laugh or to cry. This is absurd. This is weird. So, jumping to page 111, he says, Hagzama hakich v'anifuch, right? Hagzama is, it's a guzma. I just forget the word, it starts with an E. Guzma. Exaggeration, thank you. Tip of my tongue, right? See, make fun of Canadians too much. The guzma, kitsch, expansion, letzada capricious, capriziut, the tziriut blia masrunet, ham molchim bekipashal bekipah etzalachas veirus. A medaktik b'chok mivtza kol pula apichuka v'hamemshal. Right? So this crazy, crazy kingdom, which is ruled by Achashverosh, who's very, very careful always to follow the letter of the law. That all of the bureaucratic interworkings of the Persian government is also the topic of a biting critique of the Gemara. Of the Megillah. B'tira chozer v'nishne shal svarim aratzim rochavi rechash ha'achashtranim ha'yotzim haluch v'shov. All of these riders going back and forth and back and forth, right? It's the equivalent of every news agency, every messenger that there is in the kingdom running around with these messages all the time. Pam b'shlichut Haman, pam b'shlichut Mordechai, right? All the pomp and circumstance of a royal decree, of these royal decrees, the entire Megillah is filled with these crazy decrees and these mobs of riders and messengers. Hamedina hi medina chok. Right? It's a country of law. Ela shatzchok hazeh legamrei lo matzchik. At the same time, the joke is not funny. Right? V'tashito omedet charada amuka biyoter. Because the capriciousness itself is scary. Yes, in this crazy kingdom where anything can happen, anything can happen. Zuha meugenet b'chok katlanit b'yoter ad kidei absurd. That this regime, which is like, the law states that a woman must be 6 months in perfumes, so she's there. At the same time, it's murderous. At the same time, in the next second, we can go and make a genocidal decree and everybody will sit down and drink afterwards. Right? V'amelch v'haman v'hamelch yashvu lishtot v'ir shushan navocha. Haman says, "Yeah, let's kill off this nation." Achashverosh says, "Yeah, sounds good to me, right? We did it all legally. We're good." It's crazy, and you know, Shushan was like, "What's going on?" But it's absurd and it's crazy, and it's deadly, and it's deadly. Mashma Orar Bayetar Shetat Acharada Hira Hanafshota Apolot Bimigila Mordechai Esther Hanarot Shomre Hasaf Loman Bibhinot Kla absurd Amaturaf Hazeh Hen Khoshvotcha Shachok Om Namritsini Biyotra Vegyoni. But Kach Rach Magvirat Sagab Haparadi Shah Matsaf Bimigila et Aima. So at the same time it's like this whole crazy parody of a kingdom, at the same time deadly serious and murderous. And what happens is one guy doesn't bow to this other guy, so what does he do? Decides he's going to kill off his entire nation.
Yeshlu Megillah Togova Shall Yeush Marva Amok Amitsiut Absurdit.
we can see by reading the Megillah also aside that it's so absurd that you're just willing to give life. It's so crazy, you're just going to give up. Right? It's just so crazy. A person who sits there and that the entrance card, right? How much do you have to pay to enter this theater of the absurd? Oh, it's very easy. The price is very easy to enter. It's life or death. Right? You're sitting there and you're reading this and you don't know whether to laugh or to cry. This is crazy. The entire story, the entire thing is just, it's nuts. It is beyond absurd. And life and death dance around within each other, back and forth and back and forth. Is this funny? Is this deadly serious? I don't know. I don't know if you've ever been in such a situation. I've been in such a situation myself once or twice where I wasn't quite sure. You know, there's this phrase, are you serious? Where you really, really don't know, like, are you for real? One might hear elements a little bit of the Nuremberg laws also, right? People hearing the Nuremberg laws, like, come on, you can't be really no bicycles for Jews? Like, what do you mean? Like, to us it sounds crazy, and maybe to the Germans at the very, very beginning it sounded crazy. Like, what do you mean? Like, it's absurd. It's absurd, and it's absurd ad kedei that it pushes you to the boundaries of, is this real, is this not? You can't be serious, but this is the book of Tanakh. Really? They're going to kill everybody? And Rosh Hashanah wants us to understand, wants us to push this idea very, very strongly that, you know, I can't believe this. This is really crazy. I don't know whether to laugh or to cry. It's such a thing. And then he sort of zoomed out. So he says that the responses of our heroes are anything but funny. He says that we're not going to read all of it. So, no marbe paradoxa goralo ki choshech davka hamikriyut hanoshiyut eno mochekoto. So, but what happens is that we have these two timelines that are streaming through the Megillah of all these things that are, all these acts that are happening, all these this parody of different events that are unfolding in the Megillah. And you're saying, well, you know, where the godly hand is that everything gets flipped around, but nothing really gets erased. It just gets turned in a different direction. And that it shows in the human condition that at one point a person can be up and down within another second, right? Think about it. The song that we sing all the time, V'nafoch, 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 right? Right? That because they want to kill the Jews, in the end, the Jews are going to kill them. Haman gets hanged on the same tree that he planned to hang Mordechai on. Now, on one hand, you say, wow, that's nice, very, very comeuppance. At the same time, think about this. This guy was the number two in the biggest empire in the world. And with it, in the course of less than a month, right? It's 3 days. Everything turns around. Now he's hanging from a tree. The Breuer, in his commentary on the Megillah, writes the thing that every science fiction hero screams to every crazy inventor, right, or mad professor, mad inventor, who's about to let loose some type of crazy, you know, monster, robot, weapon. He's about to unleash. You have no idea the powers that you're going to let loose, right? If Haman would have done nothing, nothing would have happened. If he would have just killed Mordechai, nothing would have happened. But the more and more gigantic and bombastic his plan becomes, the more and more dangerous it becomes even for Haman. The more gigantic and dangerous it becomes for him, the more he raises the stakes, the more dangerous it becomes for him. Because in that second, it turns around. Rav Shigar highlights the pasuk that says kacha yaseh leish, right? Well, that when all of a sudden Mordechai's star is rising, when he's taken through the streets of Shushan and paraded around, and it says kacha yaseh leish asher chafetz hamelech bikaro. Right, that this is what will be done for a person who the king wants to honor. And there's another kacha in the Tanakh, kacha yaseh leish asher lo bana beit achiv. Right, and this is done to a man who doesn't seek to rebuild his brother's house. So what's the reward for that? The yavama spits in your the chalutza spits in your face. Right? The paradox between the two kachas, Rosh Hagar says, between this is what should be done for a man who the king wants to honor, versus this is what's done for a man who doesn't seek to build his brother's house. Rosh Hagar says that life, the Megillah sort of hones in, that life can be either one kacha or the other kacha, and can turn on a dime, can turn over in a second. That with it, part of what the Megillah tells us is, it says, Yoshev HaShemayim Yitzchak, that the one who sits in heaven will laugh. Why? Because all of this is ironic. The entire picture which is being drawn before us is an ironic picture. It's an ironic picture which we're seeing over here. And all of the different pieces that are so crazy, that are so absurd, are then used as pivot points, right? A point where, like a hinge, that things are going to turn around on. Which is part of the depths of what's being said when Rabbi Yochanan says in the Gemara that every time it says Hamelach, it means Melach Malchem Lachim. Every time it says Melach, it means God. Plain Melach, not Melach HaKashrizah, but plain Melach. Why? Because all of these seeming Mikraim, all these seeming uvdot, things that just sort of happened, all then take on a different meaning. They twist around v'nafochu. They become something different. God doesn't go and like just split the sea. Understanding, you know, the depths of what it means to split the sea means really to tear asunder, you know, the foundations of physical law. Say, okay, you know, water's supposed to just sit there. God says, I don't want it to sit there. It's going to split. Everyone's favorite brisker chakira. Does that mean that the oxygen split from the hydrogen, or you know, or did it split on a subatomic level? It's probably split on a molecular level, right? So, what does it mean? Did it split for each person, or was the water split? So, to abrogate nature totally versus meaning merely just to turn it and play with it. The one who sits in heaven will in the heavens will laugh. Turns it around, that the absurdity turns around again and becomes actual full-blooded laughter for us as well. That this whole, we see that each and every piece, the more absurd that it gets, the crazier and crazier that this gets, then it turns on the point and turns around. The laughter emerges from the irony, so every time it says HaMelech, it means the of Melech, not just Melech HaChashverosh. Another piece where Rav Yigal Ariel writes that every time it says HaMelech, it's actually like with a sneer, like HaMelech, you never heard like a bigger curse than when you say Your Majesty, right? Anyone who can think Your Majesty sound like a curse, right? Right, Your Majesty, right? Right, Your Honor, like it's condescending. So the Megillah is written, Rav Ariel says, in this condescending way also, that HaMelech. Right, that HaMelech is also applies to Achashverosh in such a way. So what happens then, what we see over here, in that next piece, that piece from Rav Shagar, is the kingdom of absurdity. And this absurdity becomes something which then, you know, again, turns, that's God's laughter. It's the irony of the Megillah. The Megillah then is something which goes from the absurd and the parody then to an instrument of salvation. This instrument of redemption. That within life, he says that we have this idea of mikra, we have these different things that happen, But then also, there's this notion of hashgacha, how these mikraim then can be converted and turned around. And it goes from this irony and the kingdom of the absurd to the nafochu. So moving that to the last piece, for the last 15 minutes, I doubt we'll see much of it inside, but there's other piece from Panecha Vakesh. Panecha Vakesh, if I can introduce it to you also, is a series of shirim that Rosh Shagar gave when he was the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivat HaKotel, 1982. And in it, these sichot are written in a much more yeshivati way. So if you want an introduction to his thought, in a way that we're used to a little bit more, it's a good one to pick up. I'm pretty sure they have them in the Sarim cell also. I'm not sure I haven't been there yet. This other
mess? Yeah, they have a whole section of Rosh
Hashanah. Sure. Every
well, they had a lot of it. It was in my house. But I think there are a couple of titles that they sold out last year, so those were coming dafka from America. So, what he says is that Purim seems to be the last. It's a holiday of the lasts. It's a holiday of the lasts. It's a holiday. It's the last holiday of the year, as Nisan is the first month, not Tishrei. Tishrei is the beginning of the year. Nisan is the Adar is the last month. It's the at the end of Kitvei Kodesh. It's at the end of Tanakh. It's an end. Now, Rosh Hashagar quotes a Mishnah from Sefer Yetzirah that says, "Now it's sofan tchilatan," that the end is contained within the beginning. Again, sounds very Zen. Very, very Kabbalistic, that the beginning and the end are linked inexorably. We find the end planted in the beginning. So we have a number of traditions regarding the Megillah and the holiday that we've probably heard at different points in our educational careers. Number one is that all the Torah will be batel, but not Megillat Esther. Number two, the Midrash says all the holidays will be batel, but not Purim. And Rabbi Elazar comments, Yom Kippur. That's one we're pretty familiar with. The next one is Tikkun HaZohar that we've heard before, that Yom Kippur is Yom Kippurim. That Yom Kippur is really, it's Kippurim. So he says that this teaching of Na'ut Sofam B'Tchilatan, that the end is planted in the beginning, we have that all ends are planted in the beginning. So all of the Torah is batel, but not Megillat Esther. The holidays are all batel, not Purim or Yom Kippurim. Why? Because Yom Kippur is the day of solemnness, as opposed to the holiday of joy of Purim. They're both laden within each other. The Megillah is a one of tragedy and redemption at the same time. Both of them are curled into it. It's the end and it's the beginning. It's the end of one time, it's the beginning of another time. That those who say the Megillah is more shaykh to the world of Torah Sheba'al Peh than the world of Torah Shebichtav. Its end and its beginning is all linked together. Okay, so... let's put this all together quickly because I plan on doing this in more time. There are two concepts that he says. I'll do this outside. There are two phrases that come together. Really, three phrases that come together that we use a lot in terms of speaking of a person's destiny, a person's fate, and happenstance and chance. We talk about what happens to a person over the course of their lives. We call it Mikra, we call it Goral, and we call it Hashkacha. Mikra means, it means an event, a happening, right? Mikra means a happening, a happenstance, it happened once. Right? It's a Mikra, it happened. It would appear that things seem to happen, right? That he says, "B'derech klal adam natun b'shetef hamikra'im devarim akruim lo." Things that happen to him, who lo shalut al devarim v'yotem izeh, who lo mevin amam mashmo shalachon. The mikra hitgalgel akan. So what happens? Things happen. It's a series of events. It's a series of happenings. Mikra, 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 mikra. Things just keep happening. And this, as it were, seems to form one streamline, one timeline within a person's life. If we look carefully in Megillah, it says, "Vayaged lo leMordechai et kol asher karahu." Everything that and they told Mordechai everything that happens. And the Midrash picks up on this and says, "You know who everything that happened. You know who happened upon the Jewish people, right? Amalek is described as the one asher karcha baderech, who happened upon you, as it were. That this entire worldview, right? Worldview, way of thinking of things, is it happens. The world is comprised of a series of a chain of events, of a chain of happenings. Mikra is the midav Amalek. It is the way of the way of Amalek. It's the thought process of Amalek. And then there's the goral. It's no happenstance, therefore, that Haman throws the goral, right? We say on Yom Kippur that Hashem is goralenu. He is our goral. On Yom Kippur also, what is that that thing that is done on the two se'irim? Again, goral. Goral echad l'Hashem, goral echad l'Azazel. A goral seems to be, on one hand, it seems to be, again, a game of chance. But at the same time, goral also means something deeper. Ma tovu manan goralenu. What is our lot? Right? What is our, essentially, our destiny? What's always going to happen? There's, in broad sweeping strokes, on one hand, there's the mikraot, there's the happening. So at the same time, there's a kava makbil, a parallel line, maybe even divergent parallel line, of goral, of our destiny, of what's going to be in the end. Right, of what the destiny of the Jewish people is. So we have mikraot, we have happenings, and at the same time we have goralot. And we have these two points, these two parallel lines. The one where seems like anything can happen, and then on the other hand, the kava makbil is the line where I know exactly what's going to happen. I know this ends with Mashiach and Beit HaMikdash, etc., etc., etc. That's our goral. Its resolution comes with the end of the Seal Azazel. It's what comes in at the end of the Purim story when Haman throws the lots, and that goral actually is turned around such that we see that we have a holiday from this. That's why it's called Purim, right? About on the name of the goral. And then there's this one place where these two seemingly parallel lines converge. And that's the phrase hashkacha. Hashkacha is the place in between goral and mikra, right? Between God runs the world and things just seem to happen. They converge, he says, in the place of goral. So we'll read two or three words over here. Mi'al mikra v'goral, mi'al hatov v'hara, mafia hashkacha. Between good and bad, between happenstance and destiny, emerges the idea of hashkacha. Amit batet ashlitat elokut bedvarim. Yeshno ashlav shal mikriyut. Adam istovev ba'olam hazev korim lo dvarim. Hakol mikre, hu lo sholat al shum dvar. The tumat keri. When a person says we have the level of mikra, things happen, and I have no control. I'm totally, you know, bereft of control, as we see this in the Rav's Fate and Destiny. He speaks to this point as well. Yeshno hashlav shel goral. Adam argish sheyesh eze goral. They feel that there's some lot involved here, some destiny. Eze kav shemolich oto. Something's pulling me. Zelo kav shehu keva. Hu eno adon lo. I'm not the master of it. Zoe a goralio totaliot shadam motzi bechayim shelo kamor goral hazeh atmo nitpas b'mikra shedaber shvuruti. This idea of that there's a goral that pushes me along that path, and that God runs that. And then there's this hashkacha, which bridges between the two. Hashkacha elokit lo nitpasa bekategoria noshit shel tov v'ra. that this idea of hashkacha is not within our normal categories of good and bad. Rak v'regesh ha'adam megia l'oto mishur l'oto achdut elokit hu yachol lirot b'fo'al mamash elokim manhigat olam. It's that place where we see that God runs the world, where we have goral and hashkacha, so goral and mikra, they come together in a place called hashkacha. That's bringing how all the mikraot really function with the goral. That is hashkacha, as he puts it. So this book of Tanakh, Rav Shagar says, is not so Tanakhic. Right? As we all know, as we were taught since we were little kids, what doesn't happen in the Book of Esther? No God's name. Furthermore, there's no sin. Right? Normal books have a sin, and then a response to sin. Right? Like our favorite cycle in Sefer Shoftim, the Jews sin, a leader comes up, he redeems them, and everything's okay until they forget again and wash, rinse, repeat. There's no God. There's no sin. We're missing the divine perspective. This book of Tanakh is just a bunch of stories. But in fact, it is a bunch of mikraot that reveal goral and hashkacha. Right? That these mikraot, they reveal goral and hashkacha. Now, the mikraotiness, the most mikraot of the Megillah, is the absurdity that Rosh Hashanah spoke about in the Sherit Emunah. How absurd this entire crazy world of this incredibly crazy world of Shushan is. How nutty it is, how crazy it is. It's full of these mikraot. And all of a sudden, by the end, we see that the idea of goral, gam netzach yisrael lo yishaker, that the Eternal One of Israel will not sleep or slumber, will emerge that the entire book becomes a book of hashkacha. Right? The entire book emerges that when Mordechai says to Esther, you know, right? Don't think that you're going to save yourself by hiding in the king's house, because ulayke is kazot yigad l'malchut. Because if not, revach v'hatzal yamod liyudim mimakum acher. I know for sure, revach v'hatzal yamod. For sure, there's a goral. We're going to get out of this. Revach v'hatzal yamod. But maybe it won't be you. Esther, you can be that linchpin of hashkacha. If you step up, you can be the instrument, right, to make all this come together. So of the absurd, and looking at the absurd, and what transforms the absurd series of mikraim, the absurd series of happenings that happen over the course of the Megillah, it's transformed into hashkacha by the application of this goral. One might even say that these sparks were redeemed from the impurity of the klipa. These sparks were redeemed from the impurity of the happenstance. Mikra is also from Lashon of Keri, from Lashon of impurity, that the idea of Besume Bapuria and making the mistake, seeming the mistake, right, that it seems like it was a mikra, it seems like it was just a happening, that a person had a cup of Moscato, a little bit of their prom suit, and it went to their head right away. And they said, oh, Baruch Haman, that in the end what happened is that was just a happenstance. And it seems what Rosh Hashanah is saying is, no, it's not a happenstance. This was a redemption of the Goral's Hashkacha, pulling the sparks of Mikra into the realm of Hashkacha, pulling the sparks of Mikra that were buried deep in the Klipa, in the shell of happenstance, is being redeemed through Hashkacha. It's been a pleasure to be together to learn with you over the last three Mondays. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to everyone who came, to all of them. Norman, I thought it was going to be me and three people, and already it's a gewaltig. It's been a pleasure. Thank you again so much for the opportunity.